I'm Bill DeYoung, and welcome once again to Arts Live, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. My guest today is Matthew Abernathy, who's Artistic Director of the Master Chorale of Tampa Bay. Hello, sir.
Hi, how are you?
I'm terrific. Got a busy couple of weeks coming up here, and
yes,
it's good to speak to you. I wanted to talk about Master Chorale because I don't think it gets a lot of publicity, and I think it's amazing what the organization does. I was just watching, what was it called, a video of Jack Runstead's We Can Mend the Sky, and I don't know when that was from. Absolutely beautiful music, choral music. I think for someone maybe like me, and maybe others like me, we think of maybe Carmina Burana, we think of Handel's Messiah, and well, what else is there? Well, there's a lot, and that's why I wanted to talk to you today. And then we'll get into the holiday music, which is kind of why we're here now. It's not an original statement to say that there is something really special and spectral about the human voice as an instrument. And I know you have talked about this before. It's very versatile as well, but it is an instrument, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, the body is the instrument, and I think that's what makes it so unique. In the same way that violinists agonize over finding that perfect violin, you know, they get to pick from them, but we were born with the instruments we have, which is what makes the amazing diversity of the human voice, that you can have someone who sounds like Pavarotti and someone who sounds like Aretha Franklin, and you could never replicate those voices even if you tried to.
And it makes a sound like no other instrument. Again, I want to go back to this thing by Runstead that I just, because there was a soloist, but the background was all just voice, and it was so powerful.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a cliche statement at this point, but there is something about choir music being greater than the sum of its parts, that when you start amassing more people singing together, you can achieve things vocally that you really can't do as a soloist. You know, one of the things, of course, is we often will stagger breathe things. So we can sing phrases that are extremely long and never sound like we take a breath, because the person next to you will take a breath when you're singing, and then you take a breath when they're singing, and it never sounds like the music stops. So we can achieve these amazing harmonious effects that are, I mean, you can't do it with pretty much any other instrument.
Well, what's interesting to me is, and this will be one of the very few like dumb jokes I made, they're all dumb, folks, is that in much the same way people who come from like my side of the tracks, if you will, for the longest time, all classical music reminded me of Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Yeah.
Choral music makes me think of the Lord of the Rings, you know, and that, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's, I guess it's Wagnerian or something, just that sort of sense of great space and timeliness and important things going on.
Yeah.
But it's so much deeper than that. You're also the choir director at University of Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's that? I want to ask you about the singers who are in the chorale, but at UT, are there lots of students who want to learn to sing? I mean, do you teach soloists as well or just choral music?
We're, you know, the UT is a cool school. It's a small program, which is outstanding. And we have about 100 singers in choir. We have a musical theater degree. We have a vocal performance degree. We have music education degrees. We have also just choir. If you're studying business or psychology or something else, you can just sing in choir. So we have a chamber choir that does sort of the smaller form works, things like maybe 24, 25 voices. That covers the entire span of choral music. I mean, as you've kind of alluded, classical music at large is a complicated beast, right? Because there's so much baggage associated with it, right? Like you either think it's Bugs Bunny, or you think white bow ties and tuxedo tails, or you think film scores.
There's that, sure.
Right,
that.
And so when you talk about choir music, it's easy to sort of pigeonhole it into the stuff that you might recognize. But it's some of the earliest music that, you know, we've been doing in the Western tradition is vocal music. You know, Gregorian chant, some of the original notated music. And so there's an incredible wealth of things that we get to perform. So I do that with my students. My students actually also come sing with Master Chorale sometimes. So they'll be joining us on Belshazzar's Feast in the spring, because it gives them an experience that honestly most college students won't ever get, because they can't do these works that call for a 95-person orchestra and all the rehearsal stuff and a great soloist, and they need a choir of 150. Most schools can't even sustain that.
There's something so wonderful about, it's like being on a sports team or being in a, again, a rock and roll band or something, or in a play. Yep. But I talk with theater people about this often, how being part of something bigger makes you feel, I don't know, good?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it does. You know? Yeah. I had some kids join me last year when we ended the TFO season with Mahler 2.
Yeah.
And these students had never sung a large work. They'd sung a lot of things in 24, 25 voice choir, so chamber music, essentially.
Sure.
And at the end of the symphony, they all were backstage and they just were like, I've never experienced anything like that in my entire life. And you really can't, I mean, it's you can't understand it until you stand in the middle of that sound and feel the vibrations and see the orchestra and feel, and you can just feel the collective energy just build up at the end of this. I mean, it's truly an indescribable experience.
And it's great to sit in the hall and feel that too. It's just like an orchestra where it gets into your chest and kind of vibrates.
Oh, it really does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is always a thing, right, that we learned in COVID, is that there are some things we learned that we don't have to do live. And there are some things that we learned we really must do live. Mm-hmm. And I think live music of any genre is just one of those things you realize that, yeah, recordings are great. I can listen to the Berlin Philharmonic anytime I want. But going to the orchestra, sitting there and actually feeling the vibration of the low bass, you know, rumble in your seat, you don't get that from even the best sound systems in the world.
And the Master Chorale is 150 voices, is that correct?
Yeah, we range between 130 and 150 voices.
Well, that's a lot of people. Who are these people? It's a volunteer corps, so these aren't just sort of like your general, like the guy that writes for the Catalyst and the guy that drives the trash truck and somebody works in the mall. Are these retired professional singers? Or is this people all walking? Of life. I'm curious, who makes up the choir?
Well, I mean, that is the magical thing about the Master Chorale and a lot of volunteer choruses, is that it is the guy who picks up your trash and the person who works at Starbucks. And my singers are from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. All of them love singing. That is the single common thread between us. But I do have, you know, retired professional singers. I have music educators who are singing. I have doctors and lawyers and nurses and, you know, actually the St. Pete state rep used to sing. Lindsey Cross used to sing with us. So, you know, I mean, it really is the full spectrum of singers here. And it's what makes it so special, is that they are your friends. They're the people in your circles who you would know. And they go out and they tell their friends, oh, well, what do you do on Tuesday night? I go sing with the orchestra on Tuesday night. I go sing with Master Chorale. That is how many people get to say that that's what their hobby is.
And it's also the great equalizer, though.
It really is.
It takes the guy driving the truck and the former, you know, opera singer who, you know, is just kind of around and wants to keep singing, and someone who works, you know, in the shoe store, and me, because I'm not part of the choir. Thank you very much. But yet. Right, it's still early. But everybody's on the same level playing field.
You know,
the soloists are a different thing entirely. And, you know, and that's...
But, you know, but it's because we're all working toward the common goal, right? The focal point for me is always, we love this music. It's important to us that we do this music well. We care about singing beautifully and it's enriching to our lives. Mm-hmm. And so when we're in the room and we're in rehearsal, our focus is on how do we make this music sound great? And we all bring our best work to it. And, you know, like I said, there are varying skill. We have 18-year-old students in there who are at the beginning of their vocal experience. And I have people who are in their 70s and 80s who have been singing for 60 out of 70 years at this point and are extremely experienced members, and we want that amazing diversity of people who can bring it all together.
Well, there's an audition process, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you kind of weed out the people who, quite frankly, can't sing too well.
And we do have to have auditions. I mean, the privilege we have is that we perform frequently with Florida Orchestra, and we have a very high artistic standard. But it also means that we have a very high artistic standard that we have to maintain, and we have a fairly short rehearsal period before we perform. So we usually rehearse 7 to 8 weeks before we do a concert, which is not that much time when you start dividing up how many minutes you actually rehearse. So we do have an audition process. It involves, you know, bringing some kind of a solo piece. It does some sight reading. And then really we just want to get to know you and your background a little bit to sort of get context for, you know, are you able to keep up with the pace we work at?
Oh, sure. And 20, 25 concerts a year?
Yeah, somewhere around there, probably even more now. I haven't done the numbers recently, but, you know, at least 5 or 6 programs with the orchestra, 2 to 3 programs on our own every season. We have an educational outreach program, everything. So it's a busy group.
Where do you rehearse? How do you get 150 people in the same room?
Oh, man, that is the hard thing. We rehearse at USF, so we're way up in northeast Tampa. But it is the only place we can fit 130 people into a room. I mean, it's really a challenge in this area, actually. I'm not originally from Tampa, and finding venues has been really tricky here because there aren't a lot of places that can hold large volumes of people.
You did mention that you're not from Tampa, but you came here 2 years ago from, I think it was Minneapolis?
Yeah, this is my third season here, but I was in Minneapolis previously.
Another escapee from the cold weather. What brought you here? I know that the previous director retired. Mm-hmm. They were looking for somebody. Hey, Florida sounds like a good idea.
I mean, that basically was it. I was working in Minneapolis. I'd been up there working at Minnesota Opera for several years, and then I got my doctorate at University of Minnesota. And I was finishing my doctorate and started looking around, and this job opened, and it was really the Master Chorale job was the job I had been looking for. So it opened and the opportunity arose. So my family and I packed up from cold Minneapolis and moved down to sunny Florida.
Sunny Florida, and that's been 2 years now. It's been an okay experience for you thus far?
Yeah, it's been very good. I mean, the people I've met are wonderful. The art scene here is really growing, and obviously there's, you know, one of the things I was really excited about was this is one of the very few markets that has been untapped yet. So there's a lot of growth potential in arts organizations here. And I think I and my executive director colleague, Nate Hettinger, are both thinking that this is where we want to grow this organization.
You do commissions.
Yes.
From composers. And there are, we think of, you know, Bach and Beethoven and some of the good old masters, you know, wrote choral works. Mahler, I think, I don't think I'm way off the mark there, but there are contemporary composers like Eric Whitaker who compose amazing choral works, and you commissioned him to do something. I think it's long before your time.
It was, yeah.
But he was here a couple of years ago. Probably again. I actually got to interview him too. He's a fantastic guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That deep space thing that he was doing. Do you think that would surprise people that not only are there contemporary choral composers, but it's not just sort of dusty old stuff from the 19th century?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're not sort of intrigued by classical music and you're not looking around, that you might not notice it. I think, interestingly, you would find one of the cool things that choirs do is that choirs are pretty adventurous with programming. So if you go to a strictly choir concert, you would actually be hard-pressed to find anything before 1900 at this point. Most choir concerts are pretty interested in commissioning new repertoire or performing works that are relatively new. I mean, let's say within the last 50 years or so. And Master Chorale in particular has a really long legacy of commissioning composers. So as you said, we commissioned Eric Whitaker very early on in his career. I don't remember exactly who commissioned it, but
2009, I have in my notes.
This was early on in Eric Whitaker's career.
Yeah.
And we've commissioned Jake Runestad, Joan Shimkoe, Libby Larson. I mean, really, if you go through sort of a list of great American composers, we've commissioned a lot of them. And part of it's because we want the canon to grow. You know, it's right to think that, yeah, classical music is dusty old men and it's Bach and Beethoven and Mahler and Brahms. And I love all those composers. And we also do a lot of contemporary music because I want to know what composers imagine the world of the 21st century to sound like. I want us to write music about what we're dealing with right now and texts that are interesting to us and explore what a contemporary sound is. And choirs get to do that a little bit more nimbly, I think, than sometimes our orchestral counterpoints.
Well, speaking as we were of all those film soundtracks that use that deep chorale sound, Lord of the Rings, et cetera, you know, a lot of that is newly composed. I mean, I would say pretty much all of it is.
Yeah, everything is new.
Yeah. So, yeah, I see what you're saying. And, you know, it's the sound and it's that visceral thing.
Yep.
But it's not like you don't reach back a couple of hundred years and go into somebody's
Yeah, I mean, it's all lineage, right? Like, it's all drawing. It's a through line. I mean, whether they're intentionally borrowing or not intentionally borrowing, you can't pretend for a second that most composers are not somehow influenced by Bach. And that's what I find really interesting, is that sometimes you hear a composer and think, wow, that reminds me of, you know, this composer or that composer. And sometimes you hear something and think, this is totally unique. I don't know where they got this from. And that's equally as cool, because you're sort of trying to figure out, well, where did this fit? How do I shape this? How does this make sense in the context?
How much wiggle room do you have? You get a piece by Eric Whitaker, and with his notes and everything. Is it all mapped out for you as the leader? This is how we're going to sing this? Or do you work with it? Do you mold it in, you know, as you rehearse it?
You know, any piece, I think you're always molding. You know, even composers who are super, super specific and they put details on everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to balance everything they put in the score you want to do, right? Like, your goal is to accomplish everything that the composer said. And you're also listening to the real people in front of you and saying, does this really work this way?
Oh, sure. Right. I hadn't thought of that.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, someone's performing it and you're listening and thinking, okay, I know the composer said to do this, but I'm hearing it and I don't think it works. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you make the executive decision and say, I'm gonna slightly change this. I mean, it's never anything huge. I'm not changing notes or anything.
Yeah.
And sometimes you write to the composer, especially if you've commissioned them, and say, hey, you know, we're doing this. It's not working quite the way I think you want it to work. Is this how you imagined it? And they might say, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted. And you say, okay, well, let's try
that
it out.
Works. Our guest today, if you've just joined us, is Matt Abernathy, who is the artistic director of the Master Chorale of Tampa Bay. 130 to 150 singers, all of them good singers, and it's an amazing sound. And speaking as we weren't of Handel's Messiah, it's the holiday season. That's one of those sort of ubiquitous pieces of music. Mm-hmm. That it's not quite, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but it's, you know, I'm happy for that. But it's one of those things. Yeah, I hear that. I'm going to hear that around the holidays. You had the Messiah sing-along on the 7th of December. How was that?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
We had 250 people come and sing, and we just sang the first part of Messiah, which is all the sort of, you know, recognizable quote unquote tunes if you're a singing aficionado. And it was a blast. We just got together at the Cathedral Church of St. Peter. We had our wonderful pianist Rodney Shores with us, and we sang through it and had a great time. It's one of those pieces, as you said, it's this sort of ubiquitous holiday piece.
Makes people feel Christmassy.
It is, yeah. And it's every time I come to it, the first thing I think when I get Messiah is, okay, here we go again, another Messiah. And then I start doing it and I think, no, this is really good. We do this every year for a reason, because it's really interesting, and it's still really interesting.
People brought their own scores as well?
So we provided some, but, you know, it was remarkable how many people came in with their score.
You're
with
ready
heavily
to go.
Marked up score from 30 years of singing Messiah. I have a couple singers, actually. We sing Messiah almost every other year here, and some have sung it in many other places. And in the inside cover of their music, they put a tally of where they've sung it and with who. And I have one singer who's got like a page and a half covered from Messiahs.
Well, it's an evergreen.
It is.
You are with Maestro Francis and the Florida Orchestra this weekend, actually, with Classical Christmas, which I find fascinating. Friday, which is tonight, at the Strass Center, and in Morosini Hall, I guess it is, which is where you do these things.
I think we're in Ferguson for this one.
You're in Ferguson for this? Well, okay, I stand corrected. Anyway, that's tonight at the Strass Center in Tampa, and then Saturday night at the Mahaffey Theater. Classical Christmas has a really interesting program.
It is.
To me. I was looking at it earlier, and it isn't Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and there's the Coventry Carol and some things. Tell me about the program from your perspective. Let's give it a plug here.
Yeah, well, Michael and I talk about this in August, because what's fun about this program is you wouldn't realize how much classical Christmas music there really is out there. There's tons of gorgeous stuff, but it doesn't really get done because most Christmases we do Messiah. And that's the concert. And then we do a Holiday Pops, which is really light fare.
Yeah.
So this is a chance to break out all of this amazing Christmas music that deserves to be performed, that we singers love performing, but we don't always get to do. So it's a little bit more of a pastiche of a program. So you'll hear some orchestra favorites like from Nutcracker and things like that, and you'll get to hear the choir sing Coventry Carol, some a cappella music. You'll get some sing-alongs with the
Once in Royal David City.
Yes, you'll get to sing all the your favorite hymns. And we have a few large works, like we'll get to do the John Rutter Gloria. John Rutter was just knighted this year, so Michael was very excited that we get to do something by a fellow British composer. And this Gloria is thrilling and exciting and very uplifting, but it's a feel-good program that even if you're feeling like, I don't know if classical music is really the right thing for me, this is a very low-stakes, enjoyable way to just hear some great music in a very relaxed environment.
That's at floridaorchestra.org is where you can find tickets to that. You did mention Holiday Pops, which comes up on the 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Holiday, I guess Chelsea Gallo conducts that one.
She is.
She's fabulous.
Yeah.
Your Stress Center, is it Ferguson or Morisani for that
one? No, see, this one you got me on. I don't remember.
Okay, it's probably in the Jape Theater. That's on the 20th. You have two performances at the Mojave Theater on the 21st and two at Ruth Eckert Hall on the 22nd. Holiday Pops is Frosty the Snowman and Deck the Halls and Jingle Bells.
Exactly. And, it's light fare, sing-alongs, lots of, you know, tunes you would know. We Need a Little Christmas, you know, the musical tune. So
yeah,
it's a very fun, family-friendly concert, really great performances. And of course, we have Florida Orchestra and Master Chorale will be at all of them. So it's a nicely polished up concert.
And the Lumina Youth Choir, or is that at Classical Christmas?
Lumina will be with us for Classical Christmas.
That's right. I meant to ask you who they were. I think that's fascinating too.
Yeah, we have a wonderful youth chorus here. It's actually directed by the soprano section leader in Master Chorale, Dia McReynolds. Oh. So she conducts the youth choirs. They do performances all over the place. They also, actually, they're touring internationally this year, and they'll be singing with us on Classical Christmas. So they'll do a little bit of the Britain Ceremony of Carols and a few of their own other pieces. They're a terrific organization, especially if you have young kids that are interested in singing. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, that's Classical Christmas, which again is this weekend at the Strass Center and the Mahaffey Theater. You want to check floridaorchestra.org for tickets, and I suspect that I think your website goes to Florida Orchestra for these shows for ticketing.
Yeah, you can go to mastercorral.com as well. It'll link you out there. And if it's anything that we're producing on our own, it'll take you to the tickets page for that.
How does 2025 look for you?
For the spring? Oh, terrific. We've got some great repertoire coming. We are doing Belshazzar's Feast in February, which is a once-in-a-lifetime sing. So that's one that you should come hear. It's absolutely thrilling. Then we're going to do, speaking of commissions, we're going to do a commission by Natalie Draper that we're going to pair with this amazing multimedia choral work about Leonardo da Vinci by Jocelyn Hagen. This is a visual and aural spectacle. I mean, it is so exciting. So please come see that in April. And then we end our season with Mahler's Third Symphony.
It's mastercorral.com?
Correct.
Okay. Matthew Abernathy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I will say happy Christmas and happy concerts.
Yes, thank you.